We're hearing Violin Concerto No. 5 in A Major by Mozart. Jonathan Kramer says this concerto sparkles with wit that is typical of Mozart's music at its happiest, and he suggests this humor is conveyed by the lightness and airiness of the themes. Mozart trusts that we've heard enough music of the classical period to know what ought to happen in various parts of a concerto. He plays delightful games with these expectations. He frustrates our preconceptions of form, and he laughs at us, gently but surely, for trying to fit such a unique work into a stereotyped mold. Words from Kramer's study, Listen to Music. Mozart was 19 years old when he wrote this concerto, and Evelyn Estava was just about the same age when she tackled the concerto as a young performer, with world-class coaching from the violinist who is the soloist here, Henrik Schering. Evelyn Esteva tells Samuel Thompson, I first met Schering in 1988, some months before he passed. What a character! He spoke 7 languages. This was a man who would speak to us in perfect Mexican Spanish, then talk to his manager in French. Again, during a master class and again featuring the Mozart A Major Concerto, Schering pointed to me and asked me about a phrase, actually made me go to the score. He then made me sit in the audience and continued asking me questions about music. This was not nitpicking on Schering's part, but rather directing a talented young musician to understand that details matter, that music matters, even when it's a young Mozart tweaking our nose as he plays with form. And Evelyn Esteva has matured into a musician who has a total command of the violin, as Samuel Thompson tells us, engaging in a continuing quest to come to terms with whatever work she tackles, with special attention to musical structure. She tells Thompson, chamber music helps you be a better soloist, as you have to understand structure. It definitely makes you more aware of what's going on around you. Words of violinist Evelyn Esteva in an interview with Samuel Thompson from 2014 titled Rising to Challenges. But with all of that attention to the formal aspects of music, we'll learn that Evelyn has never lost the delight in the making of music, even the sense of fun of the kind Mozart seems to have been having in his violin concerto in A major that was so important to her in her formative years. And we've just heard that chamber music is a passion for Evelyn. It might not get much better than playing in this intimate way with a longtime musical partner who happens to be her partner in life, Michael Avagliano. They are 2 members of the Madison String Quartet, and the ensemble will bring a love of music making to the Dietrich Theater in Tunkhannock this Sunday afternoon for a concert, joined by their friend and colleague Anthony Cesari, French horn. There will be music of Luigi Cherubini, Maurice Ravel, and more. We had a chance to speak by phone with violinist Evelyn Esteva about Sunday's Madison Quartet program, and what it is that these musicians share that's brought them together and keeps them together.
It's quite frankly the absolute and total love for chamber music. It's one of the highest forms of music, just the fact that you have to negotiate. It's not like, you know, a conductor tells you what to do. We have to negotiate what we're going to do with a certain piece or the other, and in certain ways it's kind of like a marriage. And incredibly, we've been together for 18 years, so we've gone through a lot of stuff. When we formed this quartet, the mission was to combine the standard repertoire of chamber music with music of Latin America and Brazil and Spain, because, you know, it's music that until very recently has been very underrepresented in the chamber music and the classical music repertoire. And I had a whole bunch of this music because I'm originally from Venezuela. So I told these guys, why don't we try this? And that's what we've been doing. We have also made it as well our mission to present music by composers established in the state of New Jersey. So we're bringing one of those pieces, three of the pieces in our program are going to be by New Jersey composer Dave Rimelis, who is really a fantastic composer and somebody who is also kind of in that, I loathe to use the word crossover, but that's kind of what he does, because he does classical, he does bluegrass, he does charanga, he does a whole bunch of stuff. So he's written these pieces, and we recorded three of those. And then, you know, we're going to do a piece for horn and string by Cherubini, because we happen to be lucky enough that our cellist is married to the great Tony Cicieri, who's the French horn player for the Philadelphia Brass. And so we're going to do a little collaboration there. Well, after that, we're going to close the first half of the program with a piece by a Mexican composer named Eduardo Gamboa, and the piece is called Cañambú. And it's kind of based on Cuban dances. And I guarantee you, you're going to want to get out of your seat and dance. Like, I can guarantee you that. It's a very, very fun piece to play, very rhythmical, very lots of fun, just fun to play. And we kind of dance when we're playing it too, you know, on our chairs, but, you know, or in our chairs. And then the second half of the program is going to be the string quartet by Maurice Ravel. And you know Maurice Ravel from many, many orchestral pieces, but he wrote simply just exquisite chamber music. And this quartet in particular is one of the gems, of the biggest gems of the string quartet repertoire. And we're just really excited to play it. It's just so beautiful and magical. It's very French, but kind of Spanish, and it's a very cool piece. And then at the end of the program, we have a piece by a Venezuelan composer named Aldemaro Romero, and it's called Fuga con Pajarillo. And what this is, it's a combination of a kind of like a Bach-like fugue with a Venezuelan folk song. So it's like a fugue in, you know, very much in the style of Bach, but it's very, again, very rhythmical and very dance-like. And that's going to be the end of the program. We do have a little encore, but that's going to be a surprise.
Let's take you back to your formative years. You spent a lot of time in orchestras, but you were listening to all kinds of music.
Well, my family was very much into music. My mother was an amateur pianist, and my father is an absolute musicophile. And yeah, we grew up listening to music every day, and we loved the folk music of Venezuela. My aunt, my mother's cousin, but I call her aunt, was Modesta Bor. She was a Venezuelan composer, and she studied in Russia with Kachaturian. So she conducted a choir. So, you know, we heard a lot of choir music, and I was in the choir when I started, you know, my education in music school there. And yeah, we listened to a whole bunch of stuff. My mother loved folk music of the United States because she was American, of the United States and of Venezuela and of, you know, Latin America in general. My father was very much, still is very much a Mozart, Chopin. He would put Strauss waltzes on the record player for dinner, that kind of stuff. So, you know, when I was 15, I started playing in the Simón Bolívar Orchestra, you know, the one that you know from the tours and El Sistema and all that stuff. And then I started knowing this whole repertoire, this whole world of huge symphonic music open to me, and that's all I was doing. You know, playing Beethoven and Mahler and Tchaikovsky and all this stuff. It was just, you know, somebody's mind blown, basically. And I was a complete music nerd, and I bought every record of every piece that I ever played. And when I was, you know, maybe 17 or 18, I went to my first summer chamber music camp, and that was in Maine with the Portland String Quartet. There it was that I discovered chamber music, and it was such a wonderful experience, and those guys are so wonderful. So I had that, you know, bug always that I wanted to, you know, have a string quartet. So when I came to the States in 1998, I said, I have to get myself a string quartet. And we met playing at a gig, and we started the quartet. We've had a couple of personnel changes, but it's been basically the same personnel since 1999.
You chose the name Madison because?
Because we had started rehearsals. Two of our original members were adjunct faculty at Drew University in Madison. So we were kind of like the unofficial quartet in residence at Drew University. And we were looking for a name, and we played around with a whole bunch of things. And I said, how about just Madison? And we decided to stay like that. And that's it. It's just Madison. It's where the quartet starts, in the city of Madison, New Jersey.
So you bring that whole experience of orchestral and chamber and folk and all of that into what you do and the choices you make. But what is it that playing chamber music contributes to the orchestral playing and the reverse?
Well, because when you're a member of the orchestra, you have to basically, unless you're the concertmaster or principal player, you basically have to blend. That's all you have to do. You have to blend. And you are working towards the vision of somebody else. The blending is good because you have to blend in chamber music too. But being a great chamber musician helps you with being an orchestral player is having your ears open and listening to what everybody else is doing at the same time, which informs what you're doing and makes you be better at it. So that's one of the things that I always strive for when I'm playing an orchestra. I always try to play chamber music.
It's wonderful to have colleagues you respect, and you make each other better.
Absolutely. Absolutely we do. You know, each one of us has I'm not going to say a quirk, but each one of us has a pet part of our vision, or somebody's always, oh, let's do this for intonation. This always, you know, working on intonation. Somebody's always thinking about rhythm. Somebody's always thinking about where the phrase is going. That kind of stuff. So it's good to not have exactly the same thoughts about a piece, because then the piece would be dull, you know? It wouldn't have a lot of layers. So when you have people who have different ideas about how something has to be interpreted or how we should be working in a certain passage, that's where we really collaborate. Sometimes there are disagreements, and you have to kind of put it to a vote. But, you know, we've been together for so long that somebody feels really strongly about something, we just say, well, let's try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, let's try the other way. And somebody suggests a third way. But it's never, you know, I've read horror stories of fight quartets and that kind of stuff, and we certainly do have disagreements, but I think we've found, like, the way things work for us.
In terms of the last piece you'll be playing, the Aldemaro Romero piece with it, that's a
yes,
fugue-like with the dances, what is it that your background and your growing up in a country listening to classical music and folk music and all of that, you know, we take for granted the sense of rhythm in music that's indigenous to Venezuela, for example? You can feel it in your body. How does that inform your playing of Western European music, where there might be dance rhythms as well? Is there a cross-fertilization there as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, and a very innate sense of rhythm and wanting to dance to anything that has a rhythm. Of course, you know, my playing, I want to say it's rhythmical and you know, you put the zing on anything you play, you know, Mozart, Saint-Saëns, Ravel, whatever. You put your personality into it, And, you know, if I'm a little spicier than other ones, I mean, it's just who I am. And I'm also a combination of many different things as well. So, you know, for example, in the quartet, it's been, for them, kind of a learning experience to get kind of like the groove of these rhythms. And for me, it's been a lesson in just, you know, discipline. It's just like, it's not all about rhythm and dance. So, you know, you have to always keep your mind open. I think it's the most important thing when you are a musician, and especially when you're a chamber musician.
We know Ravel loved Mozart. He loved the classical tradition. Do you feel when you play the Ravel that he really was dedicated to that classicism, yet making it his own?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Ravel is very, even though he was influenced by, you know, a lot by the Russian composers, and, you know, his mother was Spanish, so he had that music also in his mind, but his music, especially, you listen to the great pieces like the Rhapsody Espanol or Daphnis, a very huge scope, right? But then you listen to something like Tombeau de Couperin, which is such a kind of like, it harkens back to the Renaissance. It's so exquisite and so delicate and so Mozartian in its conception that you can't not think of Mozart and Vienna. I mean, it all goes back to that, right? And he also loved, by the way, Ravel also loved Strauss. And when you hear La Valse, for example, that was completely a Viennese waltz, transformed completely by him. But the man was a real genius.
And how about his writing for your instrument, violin? Did he do it in a congenial way where you're comfortable and you can do what he wants you to do easily?
Well, there are composers that you play their music and you're like, what? But Ravel is one of the more idiomatic writers for the string instruments. He's written beautiful music for the violin, the sonata, the Tzigane. Yeah, it's very idiomatic. It's very well composed. He knew exactly what he wanted. There are a couple of things in the quartet that are a little awkward because I think he wanted to make it bigger than it was. But in general, his writing is very, very beautifully written, for very well crafted for string instruments.
And tell us about Dave Remelis. I read that among all the things that he does, he plays charanga style violin style. Does that come into anything that you're going to be bringing us?
A little bit, yeah. We're playing three pieces by him. The first one is called Transatlantic Segway, and it's a mix of a jig and Irish jig with Appalachian music. And then the second piece we're playing is called Heir to an Orange Moon. It's just very calm, very beautiful. And then the last piece that we're playing of his is called Caprice and Groove. And in that piece, every instrument has a little bit of a solo. And I think the part that I play has, I think he told me once that he wrote it with me in mind, because it's got a little bit of that charanga kind of vibe to it.
If you wouldn't mind, introduce us to the other members in the Madison Quartet.
Okay, well, our second violinist is Rebecca Harris-Lee. She's a fantastic player, trained in Cleveland. She's a marathon runner. Our violist, Michael Avagliano, that I happen to be married to, is a fantastic violist, but he's a violinist, he's a violist, he's a luthier, and he's a conductor, and he does it all well. And our cellist is Daryl Heiser, and she's fantastic. She's from Virginia. She trained in Philadelphia. She studied with Orlando Cole. And she's a great person, and she's a mean fiddler, by the way. At parties and stuff, she whips the fiddle out and she starts, you know, old-timey Appalachian music. It's a lot of fun.
And it sounds like you all have fun together, that it's ultimately the most serious thing of all, but that you have fun and you draw us in that way.
Of course. Of course. Why would we do it otherwise? You know, this is not, we're not going to retire early on this. We're not going to be millionaires from playing our instruments, but it's so rewarding, just so rewarding that we feel like we're really really blessed and happy.
In this day and age, the world is so complex and we're all so stressed with the news and so forth. Why is it, do you think, that we need music like this in our lives at this time?
Because there will be no hope without it. There will be no hope without it. It is so visceral. It is so visceral. The sense of just how it hits you. And I don't know, I'm not a scientist, I don't know what part of the brain it activates, but it does something. It does something to you in a very primal level. People react to music in a very strong way. We need to see the beauty in things and express beauty in life and express every emotion, because what's it for, you know? I think music gives us hope.
Award-winning violinist Evelyn Esteva, a founder of the Madison String Quartet, she's recognized as one of the top performing artists in her native Venezuela. She made her New York debut in 2005 at Carnegie Hall's Weill Recital Hall. She was speaking with us in anticipation of a special concert for Mother's Day this Sunday at 3:00 p.m. at the Dietrich Theater in Tunkhannock, featuring the Madison String Quartet, joined by guest Anthony Cesari, who is a French horn player. And the music will include pieces from Latin America and also the string quartet of Maurice Ravel and a work for horn and strings by Luigi Cherubini. Admission is free, and it's at the Dietrich Theater in Tunkhannock in Wyoming County at 3:00 p.m. The Madison String Quartet, joined by guest horn player Anthony Cesari. And for more information on the web, DietrichTheater.com, DietrichTheater.com. A special free concert for Mother's Day this Sunday at the Dietrich Theater in Tunkhannock, featuring the Madison String Quartet with guest Anthony Cesari, French horn, Ravel, and more. And that's the Dietrich Theater in Tunkhannock. For more information on the web, DietrichTheater.com, DietrichTheater.com.